are now currently engaged in training, as it reported to the committee in the previous committee meetings. We want to appreciate, we've made also visits to those areas where they've been trained, and I think we must give applause to that. We must also appreciate Minister and the DM, the work that is continuously been done. And I think we must take lessons from the your offices in Centurion, the staff, the service, and if with those work can be demonstrated in all the offices. But I think we must take and compliment the good work that has been demonstrated in Centurion, in particular at visit that office during the period, and the service was excellent. Members will then take apologies, if there are any apologies, and then invite the content advisor, and we invite members to comment on the report on the written submissions. Then we'll then also invite Mr. Salmon to brief us on the item number 5. And I think also Mr. Matonsi on the how we're going to now deal with this scheduled meeting for the electoral amendment bill. It will be important that at least if we can conclude this process before SONA, and then we'll await for tabling into parliament. We'll then have deliberations around that item number 5, and then we await to get guidance on how we're going to move forward. Mr. Matonsi?
Yes, Chairperson, I don't have any apologies from members.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Mr. Salmon, can you take us through?
Good morning, Chairperson. Yes.
Mr. Salmon, before that, can Mr. Matons, can I check who's Home Affairs? I've recognized the DM.
Yeah, I've seen that there's a DM in the DG.
Okay, no, hold on. Can I invite the DM to introduce the team that is here so that we're able to record the DM?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all the members of the committee and compliments for the new year. Firstly, I would like to apologize for the minister. He is welcoming the cadets today. I believe that the meeting for today was scheduled for us to check the items that pertain to our responses that we are supposed to deliver tomorrow. Advocate Malakate is going to be joining me soon in the meeting, so it's going to be the two of us. The rest there in that program where we are welcoming the cadets, which we deem as a very important thing as well. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. IEC,
Chairperson of the session, good morning to you and good morning to members of the committee. Honorable members, good morning. Deputy Minister and the team at Home Affairs, we are fully represented today. All members of the Commission, the CEO and his team, are present. I must admit or indicate that we have all of our senior managers in the organization following these discussions. That's how important they are to us.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mirza.
Apologies, I made an omission. DG is also part of the meeting with me.
Thank you, DM. Parliamentary Legal Service.
Good morning, Chairperson, and to all members and stakeholders. I'm Daksha Kasson. I have with me Talana Halistaki, and there are apologies from Mr. Sivewe Jikela. He's still on sick leave, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. State Law Advisor.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. Compliments of the new year to yourself as well as to the commissioners, the deputy minister, DG, the honourable members and all others present on the platform this morning. Chairperson, I'm Ms. Sarah Govender from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Present with me this morning, we have Ms. Aisha Johar, Ms. Saria Williams and Ms. Harriet Mekwa. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues, for your attendance. Mr. Salmon, can you proceed?
Thank you, Chairperson. Eddie, can I just, okay, stop sharing. Let me just share again. Eddie, can I just see why it's not sharing? Eric, can you stop sharing your presentation? For some reason, it's not allowing me to share the presentation. Okay, Eddie, okay, now it's working, yes. Can you confirm that you can see the document, Eddie?
Yes, I can see it.
Thank you very much. Okay, good morning, colleagues, members, and the Commission and DHA. So in total, we received 81 submissions, of which 12 of these were substantive or more than one sentence. And the clauses are divided into four sections in this summary. The first section deals with clauses 3 and 6, which deal with the requirement to have both new political parties and independent candidates have a 20% signature. And then the second section deals with the new electoral review panel. And then the last section deals with the next section is section 21, which deals with Schedule 1A, where technical changes were affected. And then lastly, there's a summary of the short submissions. And so these are the four sections. And dealing with section clauses 3 and 6, the CASAC here, the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution, indicates that the clause that wishes to contest allow independent candidates to cast elections must submit their names, identity numbers, and signatures of the voters who appear on the segment of the voters' roll for the region in which they seek to contest. And these signatures should amount to at least 20% of the quota for a seat that was required for the seat in the previous comparable election. Members will recall this from the advert that went out. They believe that the signature requirement is incredibly high and that presents an almost absolute barrier to the entry of independent candidates and constitutes an unfair differential treatment against independent candidates. To remedy this, they propose the current drafting over here, a completed prescribed form confirming that the independent candidate has submitted in the prescribed manner. The names, identity numbers, and signatures of at least 1,000 voters whose names appear on the segment of the voters' roll for that region or province in which the independent candidate is standing for an election and who support his or her candidature. This is similar to much of the submissions, essentially asking that the 20% be reduced to 1,000 signatures, as was originally required for political parties and currently in the legislature. The individual, Zakisi Gawa, proposed that the proposal is discriminatory and that it offends the right to freedom of association, and that the amendment does not impose the same requirement on parties in the NA. And evidently, the proposal offends the letter of the spirit of the multi-party democracy. The hands of the electorate cannot be tied from dismissing incumbents. He then asked that the requirement that should multiple regions be contested by underrepresented parties, the highest quota of the comparable election determines the number of signatures. This is also unfair, since this amendment is, and this makes the fundamentally flawed in that it it will militate against or be an obstacle towards new political parties to contest in multiple regions, particularly in the smaller regions. So the question here is, will the question for members to decide is, will the signature requirement for each region, and if will the signature requirements be for each region, and if so, will the highest threshold apply to all regions? These could also be questions that they're summaries of the submission or questions that need to be decided that could also be responded to by the DHA and IAC. Michael Atkin, who members will recall has been an electoral professional that has been making comments on all of this different stages of the amendments thus far. And he indicates that only one of the objections raised was addressed by this amendment, and that is that the threshold is excessively high for independent candidates. But not the question that the amendment that the requirement is inconsistent with that of the political parties that require only 1,000 signatures upon initial registration. So he says that the names and IDs and numbers of those signing must be submitted in an electronic form for verification. If one assumes that it takes 30 seconds to capture one person's details, then the casting regional election of more would take more than 160 man hours to just capture the data over and above going to collect and find those supporters. It indicates that the wrong quota was given, and should bear in mind that the most of the discussion in the NEA has assumed the use of a quota calculated in terms of item 6A of Schedule 1A of the Electoral Act. And this figure is typically taken to be a region of 44,000 votes. However, the particular quota calculation does not exist in the bill in the same form. The applicable quota that would be calculated in terms of item 5A of Schedule 1A of the Act. In the bill, this is contained in item 5A of Schedule 1A, but this quota that is applicable for each region, given that only 200 seats are distributed among the regions, with the full tally of votes being used, the resulting quotas are much higher than that assumed by Parliament. In the memorandum presented to the committee on the 27th of September in 22, senior counsel Badlander made the same erroneous interpretation that the quota for the National Assembly was approximately 44,000, and that 30% of this would be too high. In paragraphs 23 to 75, but then also argue that the second requirement in the region of around 14,000 would and that is half of that, would be unjustifiable, or 30% of that would be unjustifiable limits to the Section 19 of rights of citizens to contest an election. On the basis of this, the portfolio committee revised the requirement from 30% to 20%. In their minds, this was revising the requirement from down from 14,000 to a region around 8,000. However, the actual quota is calculated in terms of Section 5A, Schedule 1A of the bill, which results in signature requirements as follows. If using the 2019 elections, the table will follow. This means that the bill, as it stands, requires it in every region for the National Assembly, but according to the advice given by Council, be an unjustifiable limit. And this was pointed out to the Portfolio Committee in the submission on 16 September 22, and further pointed out to the NCOP in November 22. So he indicates here on the table in the next page that the signature average would be around 15,000 for a new political party or independent candidates. He says this would essentially make Parliament a closed shop and create a barrier to entry, to the independents and new political parties. And that is inconceivable that any court would look kindly upon this restriction. And the fact is the need to limit the number of independent candidates on the ballot paper is not a sufficient motivation for this entry of Barry. The ACDP then note also that the 20% requirement is would result in around 13,000 to 19,000 signatures, not the 8,000, and depending on the size of the province. This would be considerable and unreasonable, and they also they call for around 1,000 signatures instead of 13,000 to 19,000. Whereas Michael Atkins before it can required can the signatures be reduced from 15,000 to around 8,000. And then ALTA, the organization undoing tax. I forget the name of the acronym, but the name of the expansion of the acronym on the back, on the bottom of the document. This is a barrier to entry, the clause, and it creates a concern of fairness and the mental sense that these parties now need to do the same amount of signatures. This does not address the very high growth that's still required for independent candidates. Parties have a much greater reach over multiple regions to procure these signatures. Also maintains that the signature quota must be reduced. Vali Musa, in all the other submissions, I've only focused on the where the submission is related specifically to the call for additional comments. And where they didn't relate, I left them out. But Mr. Vali Musa, who members were aware, was on the electoral panel to consider different electoral systems, makes more general statements, which I include here because they relate in part. He indicates that the ballot paper could be very long and unwieldy, and this could diminish the right to vote, and any attempt to prevent this by making the qualification requirements for independence onerous will in all likelihood be rejected by the Constitutional Court. So the entry requirement is not sufficient justification, although the ballot paper will be unwieldy. Secondly, the principle of fairness is not entrenched in the current bill, where the bill requires an independent candidate to collect X number of signatures, the same is applied to all candidates, regardless of whether they are on party lists or not. Thirdly, the constitutional principle of proportional representation is violated in the bill, and this will result in a large number of votes not being counted. This is the first time since the advent of democracy that voters could feel cheated, and for good reason. The fourth, then, the proposed system would result in independent MPs who are free-floating, not accountable to either political party or to a defined constituency. And fifth, the current bill does not promote the constitutional values of openness, responsiveness, and accountability. And then the question essentially there to be answered is, again, should the entry requirements be reduced to 1,000 signatures, as it is with political parties in the NA, and is proportional entry compromised by all the wasted votes? The ISI then indicates that although it is correctly indicated that to institute qualifying criteria for independent candidates, and indeed parties as well, is required at some level, the level of support to be demonstrated prior to the IEC incurring logistical costs attached to such participation, the test of reasonableness needs to be satisfied. And in this case, should the qualifying criteria be of such a nature that it will be difficult for candidates to achieve, it could be interpreted as a scheme to keep independent candidates out of the race. While the bill may technically provide for independent candidates to participate, in reality, this may well be unachievable. Therefore, a more reasonable number of seconding votes need to be considered. The situation the Institute believes will be exacerbated through the tight timelines that will be necessity due to the delay in the amendments. The elections are already taking place in mid-2024, whilst the electoral amendments are already still under consideration. this process will be followed by, sorry, let me just, Eddie, sorry, can you still hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. The process must be followed by the IEC in terms of planning, the drafting of rules, regulations, and design of seconding forms and templates, etc. Candidates cannot start collecting signatures until all the uncertainties have been cleared up, which could leave them with very high number of seconding signatures to be provided for in a very short space of time. If anything, the independent candidate should require less signatures than political parties who have a better infrastructure to gather signatures, and then would be expected from independent candidates. And thus we reiterate their previous remedy, namely that the independent candidates be required to secure signatures with the same number, that is 1,000 signatures as for political parties. The Independent Candidates Association and Defend Our Democracy both indicated they support the clause, however, they do not support the high barrier to entry regarding signatures and votes to be achieved in both the NA and provincial legislatures. Vernon Hall and Rulof Pretorius were actually short submissions, or they were listed with Dear South Africa as part of short submissions, but they're slightly more substantial, so I include them here. Indicates that it would be confusing to the public to discriminate against independents, to have independent individual candidates in the form of independents stand against political parties. Since he's arguing that only individuals be listed. It's unfair and in fact completely impractical to expect independents to get so many signatures. An independent candidate in multiple elections, where even smaller municipalities, the average ward is about 5,000 voters, only need about 50 signatures. So to be fair, in the light of parliament, where the quota will be around 50,000 or 10 times bigger, or 500 signatures should be enough. But if a concern exists that each and every small church may want to candidate to stand for them, then may well increase it to 1,000. Indicates that in 1995, he had to get 50 signatures and it took him a week, and extending it to 500 would probably take 10 weeks for an individual, and 1,000 would probably 20 weeks. And any candidate who is able to get so many signatures has to be vegetarian, but also to have a huge commitment to get into parliament, believe that candidates, that the constitution says they have the right to stand and hold office. So this was to individuals. Essentially, just asking, saying, isn't 1,000 sufficient proof of seriousness, given the time it would take? Daniel Prince, who is also an individual from the short submissions, and the most pressing issue in the amendment is that it seeks to place limits to those who participate in South African elections. This could potentially disenfranchise citizens who are unable or unwilling to meet the new, more stringent requirements. Limiting the right to vote is a dangerous path to go down, as it could sever portions of the public and undermine the legitimacy of the democratic process. And then asking the question, is the high signature a form of disenfranchisement? Next, we go on to clause 21, which deals with Schedule 1A and some technical amendments to the calculations. Michael Atkin indicates that the changes to seat allocation calculations, in the minor change to the seat allocations, independent candidates were included in the recalculations that take place if any independent received enough votes for two or more seats. In this context, the change is reasonable. The effect is minor and certainly did not merit the IEC informing the NCP that this would substantially improve the bill. However, the change leaves a particular anomaly unresolved, and additionally includes independent candidates as potential victims of this anomaly. If there is a recalculation due to additional seats awarded to independent candidates and where the quota is reduced, then it is possible that a party, and now an independent candidate, can be awarded a seat on remainder in the first allocation and then lose that seat in the recalculation to a larger party that did not gain a seat on the mainland in the first allocation. Why this is anomalous is that the party with the lower remainder on the first allocation can gain a remainder seat at the expense of a party or independent candidate with the larger remainder. In those circumstances, can this meet the standard of being a fair election? This anomalous consequence of recalculation employed in item 7 and 12 of Schedule 1A has been shown repeatedly by him to be defective, but have been ignored, according to him, by the IC. Except for the added measures to prevent seats from being transferred from one party to another in the event of a vacancy. And he indicates that Parliament was wrongly advised by the IEC in that the change brought about by the NCOP concerning seat allocations for the NA was wrongly dismissed by the NCOP Select Committee following a false statement by the IEC that my proposed alternative would result in the same allocation as the bill against it. And Atkin and ACDP asked the question to the DHA and IEC, is the statement in bold possible and how will it be addressed? Essentially, this unfair reallocation of additional seats. The ACDP then take note of the proposed amendment to Schedule 1A and are concerned that the provisions contained in items 7 and 8 relating to the forfeiture of seats where independent candidates are provisionally allocated more than one seat and recalculations will benefit the majority party, either at national or provincial level, to the detriment of independent candidates and smaller parties. So essentially the same concern as that and above. The provincial seats will be calculated first, and then there will be a recalculation process on which the votes left over once an independent candidate reaches the required threshold will go to the party that receives the most votes. It means that larger parties may get more than their proportional share of seats. This is the result of the model adopted by independent candidates in the bill. Mr. Garba indicates that the clause dealing with Schedule 1A, removing most votes and substituting the phrase highest proportion of votes goes against the Freedom Charter where the people should govern. Accordingly, the amendment should be rejected because they seem to undermine the constituency votes by stealth through highest proportion votes. Kasak then in the new clause 23 dealing with the electoral reform consultation panel being proposed, Kasak indicates that they support the insertion but have reservations about the manner in which the panel is constituted and will function. And firstly, it's not clear why the panel appointment is vested in the minister. The authority to prescribe an electoral system is vested in the National Assembly in terms of Section 46 of the Constitution, not an executive power. The National Assembly must therefore retain for itself the power to establish a panel and to require the panel to report directly to it and the relevant ad hoc or portfolio committee. Public confidence in such a panel would be far greater if it were convened by the National Assembly with the necessary participation process. The insertion of the minister between the panel and the National Assembly also creates an unnecessary lengthy process for the delivery of the report and gives the impression of executive interference in legislative processes. The minister should provide only administrative and operational support to the panel while the National Assembly retains a substantive legal authority to control the panel. Kosak also submits that Clause 23 current form is too prescriptive in the way that the activities of the panel may undertake prior to and after the elections. This does not serve any manifest purpose. The panel should be given the freedom to choose which activities to undertake and when and how it should do so based on expertise, availability of members, timelines, and that such programming activities be made by the panel after consultation with the Electoral Commission. questions essentially to be resolved. They are both by CASAC and ISI, is that should the establishment of the panel be based in Parliament or rather in the Minister? And should the Minister rather provide only administrative and operational support? And then lastly, should the panel function be less prescribed and decide its functions independently? Mr. Garber indicates that the amendment should not be part of the Electoral Act, and that this is an effort to subvert multi-party democracy by the committee. He doesn't give details. Michael Atkins indicates that there's no inherent requirement to include this panel in the bill, and that the minister could have convened this panel at any time of his choosing. And that its use as a means to postpone the extending the deadline of the court is problematic. However, he indicates that the bill is worded to give discretion concerning the proposed panel, how it's to be convened, by saying that the minister must establish the panel within 4 months of the commencement of the section. The possibility exists for commencing the section at any time subsequent to the commencement of the rest of the bill. The wording should be rather altered to say within 4 months of the commencement of this act, so there is no ground for delays. The panel reports to Parliament a full year after the 2024 elections, with the potential extensions going beyond that, also given the public consultations that may happen only after the 2024 election. Then the same period would be available to Parliament then, as was available after June 2020 amendments to in the current bill. On the Minister's own account, it could be viewed that this would be not sufficient time to implement a comprehensive electoral reform, albeit that the recommendations have already been prepared. There is no inherent reason to leave the presentation of such a report as late as 12 months after the 24 elections. This could be done as easily and soon as 3 months after the 24 elections, providing the panel is convened within 4 months of commencement of this bill, and providing that public consultations have no time restriction based on them. Also, let me just give the summary of the questions there. Essentially, the question there is, both from Atkins and Defend Our Democracy, is should the panel commence within 4 months of passing the act and report 4 months after the 24 elections rather than 4 months after the passing of the section and a whole year after the 24 elections? Also, indicate that for true public participation, the possible systems need to be put to the public in order to allow informed public discussion on the different options. The panel must have the capacity to engage with the media, social media, and communities in a manner whereby the citizens can feel that they are part of the process. The panel should be constituted 3 months after the commencement of the Act to avoid delays, and the panel should consist of 7 members rather than 9 to save costs. The AGDB indicates that a much better approach would be to take the best models from both the Fund Sales Subcommittee as well as the Minister's Advisory Committee, and rather subject those models to extensive public participation, as opposed to starting the whole process afresh. Given the limited time allocated to the proposed electoral reform consultation, this would have been much better. The available electoral systems are known, and the Parliament has already been advised at length. If another panel is to be established, there must be far more meaningful engagement. And they must also have the capacity, as indicated by Alta, to engage with social media and communities more proactively. The ACDP is also concerned that it will only commence 4 months after the passing of the section, and would rather be 3 months after the commencement of the Act. The panel should also only consist of 7 members rather than 9 to save costs. in order to avoid further delays, the panel should also submit its report within 6 months of the 24 election, with the potential extension of no more than 3 months. Otherwise, Parliament may face the same time constraints in the run-up to the 29 election as they did with the MAC report and the draft legislation in the run-up to the 24 election. Both the ACDP and the independent candidates there agree that the commencement of the panel should occur 3 months after the passing of the Act and report 6 months after the 24 election. So the Inclusive Society Institute indicates that the inclusion of the provision provides some comfort, that there's acknowledgement by the legislature that there's a broader electoral reform necessary, and that the public requires such reform on an urgent basis. We are of view that the society will not accept a delay beyond 2029. They wish to make the proposal that 233B, whilst they agree with the public participation program proposed, such participation should not be limited to responding to proposed models by the panel only. It should also allow for the public and also to also proactively make their own proposals with regard to the electoral models for the panel to consider. 23.9A only provides for South African citizens to become members of the panel. It may be prudent to allow for a limited number of international experts, one or two, to become members. This may help ensure that the model ultimately proposed by the panel meets the highest international norms and standards. 23.9B provides that the minutes to consult the commission in the appointment of the members to the panel. The ISI proposes the insertion of parliament in place of or in addition to the commission. This is to ensure that free thinking by the panel and unhindered by the potential bias and preferences that the commission may have. This amendment would help remove any perceived or real conflict of interest and preference of candidates to achieve the commission's preferred outcome. And so the question really there is, should there be public consultation required in the specifications, and then should an expert international panel member be included or be allowed? The ICA support the clause. They confirm that they've been involved in the publication of several reviews, including the Fund Sale Flavitt report, and helped compose the Lakota electoral amendment bill over a period of 18 months. And due to this, they make the following recommendations: that the panel should be constituted 2 to 3 months after the Act to avoid delays. The panel must also include persons with expertise in constitutional legal drafting and democracy and active social engagement. An extensive public education program concerning the different electoral systems and their impact on the effects on the enhancing accountability and direct representation must take place. And that the panel should report to Parliament to improve accountability. A comprehensive media plan to communicate and engage with the public is also required, as this would only improve credibility and improve civic endorsement. And that they confirm that it will be challenged the draft electoral bill in the Constitutional Court, depending on the outcome of the finalized bill. Again, the question there is, should there be inclusion of constitutional legal drafting and democracy and active social engagement? And should the panel be required to educate the public and report to Parliament? Depends on the democracy, implore Parliament and the Minister to not make the same mistake that is stalling the work to get meaningful electoral reform instituted before 29 elections. That the work must occur with informants of the bill being signed into law, and that civic organizations must be engaged as well as represented in the panel. The question in addition is, should civil society be included in the panel? Also, just affirming the commitment by President Ramaphosa to the Zondo Commission recommendations that electoral reform needs to be a national dialogue. The ANC in the Peter Makoba region essentially just resubmitted the same submission that they made to the NSOP without changing it. There's no direct reference to the sections in this bill. However, the indication is that to the panel is that radical changes to the electoral system could result in increased instability and possible outbreaks of violence. And that in an attempt to avert conflicts as has occurred in much of the continent, the electoral system shouldn't be changed too radically too fast. And then the commission via DA South Africa. In total, there were 72 short submissions. Excluding duplicates, of which there were four, and four submissions which were about the wrong bill. But including the three short submissions I mentioned up above, the individuals. So in total, 59 don't support the bill, and that's 82% of those 72 submissions. Eight don't fully support the bill, that's 11%, and five support the bill, that's 7%. The reasons given for not supporting the bill were 38 were for the bill in its entirety. 13 submissions that it's on the constitutionality, 5 for other reasons not specified, 1 for the disparity between the candidates, and 1 due to the electoral reform panel, and 1 no specific concern. The 8 that don't fully support the bill, the main reasons being the disparity between the candidates, 3 being on the constitutionality, and 2 being the bill in its entirety. I just realized, there were an additional 2 disparities between, so it's actually 3 disparities, 3 mentioning the disparity between candidates, 3 on the constitutionality, and 2 on the bill in its entirety. All right, I did a recount. And those who support the bill indicate that the disparity between the candidates was resolved, 2 that on the constitutionality being improved, and 1 that there's no particular concern on their support. So that's the submissions in their totality. Sorry, there was quite a bit of duplication, but you'll see that the concerns are similar across the various submissions. These are the names of the various submission expanded, where we give acronyms, as well as the individuals who also submitted, making up for the 12 substantial submissions. So that's what I have for this morning. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Mr. Salmon, for comprehensive summary of the issues submitted. I'm not sure when I was going through, I think you'll advise it so that it's a proper capturing. On the panel, if you can just look, check OTA and SADP, it appears that there's the same submission, unless you've captured it. You didn't capture one of the 2 correct, but I think there's the same submission. I'm saying written notes. Just check on that so that we don't, if you have omitted something, we can deal with that later. Thanks, members. These are the issues which members of the stakeholders, political parties, NGOs have responded to the written submission. And I think there was a clear indication on the advert on areas where a written submission has to be considered by the public. And is an area where we must focus on. There are other issues which already been exhausted, dealt with by the committee and the NSOP. So I want to assist that both our stakeholders, as they respond in line with the advert that were issued for public comments on the proposed amendment, it will be our focus so that we don't lose sight of the issues that we have requested for public comments. I'm going to invite members to comment on. Hello? Yes. I'm going to invite members to comment on the presentation, and then we'll then establish how we're going to interface once Mr. Matunzi has already requested, presented the program. Honorable Lee, Honorable Fanner Merve, Honorable Rose, Honorable Dito, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Mohale, Honorable Lukwase, and Honorable Mutise. I'm fully aware that there are members who have already indicated that there'll be load shed. Honorable Van der Merwe, Honorable Kanyile, and Honorable Mutise. I think we can just note that if there are difficulties on the network, we can just note that. Let me start with Honorable Play in that sequence.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to all honorable members and all support staff, colleagues. I think I must also take this opportunity of wishing everyone all of the best for 2023. And thank you for the contributions that have been made over the past year. Chair, I'm going to go straight into the submissions that are made. I think it's important to first acknowledge and accept that we have a society and citizens that really participate in that there were so many submissions made. We also want to appreciate the content advisor for having summarized the submissions that have been made. Chairperson, I want to propose that we should actually, because I just think it might be premature for us to make decisions or even have discussions without having received further inputs. I know that we have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow and on Friday, and perhaps we can then consolidate all of our discussions after we've received all of the responses and submissions, because it will make it easier for us as a committee to deliberate. I also want to indicate that we do have time constraints, and in doing so, we won't be going back and forth, to and fro. If we take the submissions that were made by the public and then responses, and then be able to discuss each of the items cross-referenced accordingly, we will then be able to deliberate and reach a decision. And so my proposal is that committee takes note of all of the submissions made, and that we then deliberate further after we've received all of the submissions that were made. That's my proposal, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lee. Honorable Van der Merwe, co-chair.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to you and our colleagues, fellow members of Parliament, our legal advisors, our minister, our deputy minister, our IEC colleagues, and everyone else on the platform. And may I also wish everyone a wonderful 2023. I would also just like to take the opportunity to thank, I think this process was a very valuable process, and I think looking or judging from the substantive inputs that we got from South Africans, we really need to thank all of them for taking time to engage with Parliament and with this portfolio committee. I think we really value their sound contributions. I would not disagree with the proposal that Honourable Pillay just made in terms of how we proceed in dealing with the submissions. However, Chairperson, I would just maybe want to make a few initial comments, which are actually the comments that I made in previous meetings as well, the last meeting and some of the previous meetings. Chairperson, you will recall that when we debated this bill in the National Assembly, it was the IFP's view and was also the reason why we didn't support the bill in its current form, and that was that we had agreed as a political party that we think that the qualifying criteria is important, but that the signature requirement was still far too high. And I think right from the start, I had proposed that it be 10 to 15% maximum, which would have been 4,400 signatures. And I think, therefore, the overwhelming inputs from South Africans saying that they believe it remains too high, that it's that it's counterproductive, or that the threat, that it's not fair, or that it's an obstacle to participation and a barrier to entry, is a concern that we need to take very seriously. I know you said in your introduction that you believe some of these issues we have passed, or the NCOP have passed and we have passed. But I think when South Africans tell us that they think it's far too high, that it's not fair, that it's unconstitutional, that it will not lead to a fair process, it is something that we must consider in our engagements. Secondly, Chairperson, my other comment would be around the issue of the panel. I did raise it when we left each other in December, that I do not think it should be the sole prerogative of the minister to appoint this panel. The minister unfortunately came under criticism with the last process, the last MAC, because he was, he was criticized for the options that we picked, or his advisors and the department picked. And I think it must be a more inclusive process, in that it should be Parliament working with the minister to establish that team or that panel, and that panel should report back to Parliament. So I think some of the proposals that the public gave us in terms of how they would like this panel to be constituted, that it needs to include civil society organizations, that it must include experts in electoral reform and constitutional law experts, are all sound proposals. And I also think the proposals that were made in terms of when the panel should start its work, that it should start sooner than later, is important, and also that the work of the panel should not be restrictive in nature as contemplated currently in section or clause 23.3. So I would agree that today is not for debating these issues, but I thought I would just make those initial submissions, and also just to thank our content advisor for also putting it together in such a consolidated document. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Van der Merwe. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson. And greetings to all the colleagues and the members of the various different departments. I'd like to add my voice to the vote of thanks to each person and organization that took time to contribute and participate in this public participation process over the holiday period. And I do agree that today is probably not the day for debate on these issues. There are just a few things that I'd like to highlight that the various stakeholders can please give us a bit of feedback on when they report back tomorrow and when they give their inputs. And the one thing is on the vote threshold, which has been criticized since the start. And we've really, we've received presentations from the IEC, for example, and we went with the lowest option that was given to us. And I think this is, it's something that's just continued to go on. And so I think it's just important that tomorrow when we receive that feedback, that we just get a reinforcement of what is behind the 20%, what is the rationale behind it. Because obviously the IEC will talk to the 1,000 in that proposal. What is the rationale behind the 20% that was presented to us that we went for? And then also just a question to our legal advisors. We talk a lot about the threshold and the voter threshold. And there are many countries around the world that actually put thresholds in place to avoid ungovernability, to avoid fragmented legislatures for the sake of governance, because ungovernable governments are no use to citizens. And so my question is, you know, there's discussion, there's talk about saying it will be taken to court, it will be taken to court. But what tests would the court use to determine whether such a threshold is unconstitutional or whether it's unfair? I think if we can just understand that, it might also help us to deliberate on that. Are there specific tests that the court would look at to say, is this fair, is this equitable? I think that will be very useful to us to get that feedback tomorrow. Then just in terms again of the Electoral Reform Constitution or Consultation Panel, certainly agree with the inputs that have been given in terms of the timeframes, because the risk does appear to be that if it starts a year after 2024, that one would be in the same position as we are now, being rushed, trying to implement that kind of process. So certainly the inputs make a lot of sense. And also, you know, the issue of whether this panel should be under the minister or under the committee. But I think we've discussed this, Chair. So I think the main question on this really is, or the main point on this is about the public participation, which is absolutely critical. Because as much as I, you know, gave thanks for the public participation that took place here, there are many voices that were heard way back when we started this process, when we went on the ground. And those voices already fade into the background. And I think it's an absolutely critical point that we don't have a situation where something like this starts a year after 2024. Then we start to be told that there's a rush because the IEC will have to implement new systems and demarcations. And then in the end, we don't have an absolutely comprehensive public participation on the ground, which includes explaining different options to members of the public that they can't participate. And this would include things like electronic voting, which we will discuss in the next item. I think, we need to take time not only to go to the public and say, what do you think about this document? But as part of this process to really also explain some of these things in more detail. It can't just be one visit or one opportunity to contribute. So I certainly think, yes, this should be fleshed out more, and there should be a very specific focus on public participation on the ground. And then finally, Chair, in terms of the constitutionality, and again, we're seeing the word constitutionality a lot in the feedback. And my question again to our legal advisors and to the Department of Home Affairs legal advisors is to please confirm to us that that they do not see any constitutional issues or any constitutional issues that could be a risk that we should really consider in this process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ross. Honourable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. Greetings to all of my colleagues and everyone who is present, and also the minister. Yes, Chair, we acknowledge the submissions that were presented to us. But like Honourable Pillay was saying, let us wait for all the submissions to be presented to us, and then we can tackle all of them all at once. But so far, Chair, I don't have anything to say. I think that we must wait for everything to be presented to us, and then we can now see how are we going to maneuver around them. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tito. Honorable Kanyele. I'll check it again. Honorable Mkhale.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to all the colleagues. I think I'm covered by the submission of Commissar Tito. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhale. Honorable Khwase. Okay, Honorable Modise. Mr. Matonzi?
Yes, Chairperson.
Oh, I thought of.
I'm here.
Oh.
Okay. Yes.
I thought I'm out also. Honorable Hwasin, Honorable Modise, are you online? And Honorable Khanyile.
Chair, Ms. Lekhwase, she's not in the meeting. Ms. Khanyile as well, but Ms. Modise, she is in the meeting. Maybe she has difficulties with the network.
Okay. No, thanks, members. I think it's clearer that we'll note the report. We'll then have two issues that are raised on the submissions, and members have commented already. And I think that give indication on the reports that will be presented by the stakeholders, IEC, Home Affairs, and our legal team, in terms of responses to some of the issues that were dealt with. If carefully listened, when I said that other issues which have already been dealt with, I did not make a reference to certain provisions. I was just reflecting on the path we've taken and the proposed amendment from the NCOP which we're dealing with. And I think that should be noted. We're going to get a sense from the IEC that because they'll be expected to respond in the next scheduled meeting, and the legal team and the Home Affairs, then we not on to comment on the issues that are arising, because they're still having, you are having your own report that we're presenting to the committee, just to ascertain that we're all in the same space, so that we don't delay the work on this subject. Dear Deputy Minister, can I get an indication that if we are ready for to the next meeting?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Myself and the team, we've noted all the inputs that have been made today. We will be ready for the next meeting, and the minister will also be available in that particular meeting to then offer you the responses to issues that affect Home Affairs. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thanks very much. Commissioner Miyata?
Chairperson, we have also noted issues that are raised, and we will be ready to respond tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Is Mr. Kelembe? Okay, noted.
I'm dealing with Lord Honest Mr. Kelembe, Chairperson. It's sort of web, yeah. Yes.
Oh, no. Thanks, Commissioner.
Yes, Chair, Ms. Halis Stark and I, we've listened to the presentation, we've noted all the submissions and the comments, and yes, we'll be preparing to present at tomorrow's meeting.
Okay, thank you. State Law Advisor.
Thank you, Chairperson. The officer has also noted issues that may have arisen, and should anything be required from us, we will be prepared to answer that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. All right. Thanks, colleagues, for this item. We'll await for the responses so that the committee deliberate and take decision on the issues that we will be engaging on. We'll stand off this item, Mr. Matonzi.
Chairperson, before we can I request that all the stakeholders that are presenting tomorrow, if they can send the presentations today so that I can distribute to members on time.
Okay, yeah, I think that is noted. I think we'll carry that advice, Mr. Matonzi. Can we stand off this item? Or Mr. Matonzi, can you just also, now that you are on the platform, before we go to the second item, the last item, maybe other colleagues I see on Home Affairs, they may need to leave the meeting. Just on the schedule of our proposed schedule of our meeting so that we were affirmed as on this electoral amendment bill process.
Oh, okay, Chairperson. No, thanks. Yeah, so I have sent the schedule for all our meetings for this first quarter, but the first meetings that we are having starting from today until the 7th, we only dealing with the bill. So today we did receive this report from Adam. And then tomorrow, as Chairperson and the DM indicated, you know, the IEC, the department, and Parliament Legal Service will respond to these submissions that were received. After those submissions, then we are going to have deliberations on the whole submissions that were made today and tomorrow. And then we are hoping that if maybe tomorrow the committee could be in a position to make decision on some of the issues that are being raised today and tomorrow, so that now towards the end of the meeting tomorrow, and then the committee is able to give a clear instructions to legal service and the state law advisors to start finalizing the C list. You recall last year there was some amendments that came from the proposed amendment that came from the IEC. So if there are changes, and then the committee should be able to give that clear instruction to them so that by Friday in the morning, then we are able to have the state law advisors to brief us on the C list. And then we adopt it, and then so that next week Tuesday, then we are able to finalize the bill. So that is the timeline, Chairperson, for us by the 7th, which is next week Tuesday, to have adopted the bill and also to adopt the report to be sent to the National Assembly. That's all, Chairperson, from my side.
Okay, thanks, noted. Thanks very much, Mr. Matonsi. Now we can move to the next item.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you hear me?
Yes, proceed, Mr. Selma.
Thank you. Yes, the two items are on the International Study Tour and the Strategic Planning Committee. Firstly, on the International Study Tour, where there's been a process that's been engaged on for quite some time now, where the research unit and myself have been conducting inquiries into what possible countries the committee could visit to inform its debate, both on the current electoral reform process as well as the actual voting the actual voting method, particularly electronic voting. And so, based on the research as well as feedback from the IEC, the two countries that we've narrowed down to are the USA and Brazil, both of whom
Mr. Salman. Sorry, I see the hand of Deputy Minister.
No, Chair, I'm checking if we can be excused now. I'm sorry to disturb your proceedings.
Okay. Now, I've indicated the DM and the IEC if because that is an item which we're required to deal with. If you have to be excused, you can do that. Thanks, DM and your team and the IEC. But if you want to stay, you can also stay. Thanks very much. You can proceed, Mr. Selma. Mr. Adams?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry to disrupt your meeting. We want to take the opportunity that you are availing to us to leave the meeting because we have some work. Yes. We will be making the preparations and we'll send the report either late today or early tomorrow. That's what we are working on. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Okay, no, thanks. You are released, DM and your team. Thanks, Commissioner Mirza and your team, you are released. State Law Advisor, you also want to be released?
Thank you, Chairperson. We We will remain for this item, Chairperson.
Okay. Parliamentary Legal Service. Okay, proceed, Mr. Salma. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, so as indicated, we've narrowed down the selection of countries, initially advised both by the research unit and by the IEC in terms of what possible countries we could consider that were using electronic voting in various means, both adopting it and in some cases moving away from moving back to manual voting. So there's other countries proposed other than Brazil and the US were also India and Venezuela. But based on the demographics as well as the international benchmarking in terms of how democratic these states are and looking for things that are comparable to the voting systems in South Africa, we've narrowed it down to the US and Brazil. And we are now in the process of refining the application, which has to go through a number of processes, including going through DERPA and going through the political approval within Parliament. That process is in due course. And looking at how long those processes take, the likely proposed time for the study to be from the 16th of June to the 30th of June this year. So this will be in the first 2 weeks of the longer constituency period. So there's a number of administrative requirements. And then within the US, the two states that we've identified, because as the federal system in the US allows the decentralized management of voting, so each of those states manage things differently. The two states identified are New Jersey and Illinois, who have larger populations, but also use a diversity of different voting methods, which gives them the unique insight in terms of what the advantages of the different systems are. So, and then in Brazil, they've been conducting national level electronic voting since 2000, and smaller regional electronic voting since 1996. And they've got a large population, and they're also a BRICS member state. And so, based on these considerations, these are the two countries that we've considered for the study term. And then the additional requirements will just then be, as Eddie's indicated, that members all have their official passports and that there will be a visa application process for the US. So there might be some admin for members to do, because we don't have currently have bilateral arrangements specifically for visa exemption with the US, but we'll advise members on that as soon as possible. Once their approval has commenced. And then on the strategic planning, we've identified the last week of March as a period of strategic planning. This is on the 28th in the current committee program. We're going to receive briefings from the DHA and IC on their strategic plans in any case. And so, now the new parliamentary program indicates that last week is in fact the committee's week, so we discussed with the chairperson the possibility of using that entire week as both an oversight and a strategic planning week. So we actually conducted the strategic plan overview with the IEC and GPW and DHA in Pretoria. And then subsequent to that, the committee conducts its own strategic or annual performance plan process based on the input from the entities, as well as given the guidance of the chairperson to conduct a legacy review of sorts to see what the outstanding strategic issues are from our term. to make sure that all the issues that were promised both by the entities and by ourselves met to the best of our ability in the last year of our of this parliament. So that process to be taking place on the from the Tuesday to the Friday, from 28th to the 31st of March. It was initially planned for the 1st and 2nd of April, but now we have committees week and there are some, I think, some parties that aren't available on that weekend. So we're looking at conducting the strategic planning with the entities and with the committee itself in that week from the 28th of March to the 31st of March in Pretoria. So yes, that's the current plan on those two items. I go back to you, Chairperson.
Okay, are you done, Mr. Salma?
Yes, sir. Oh, sorry, Chairperson. There was one issue that you raised on the submissions on ALTA and ACDP. There was some overlap between those two submissions, but they weren't identical. They used some of the same content, but they weren't exactly the same submissions. I forgot to answer that.
Okay, noted. Thanks. I think in summary, two issues. We agreed that last year we supported a strategic meeting with the department to deal with all the issues that since we've been in session, work that has been done, the weaknesses were to understand in details where we are and the challenges that department is dealing with. So we agreed that we'll propose a date. And I'll suggest that let's look on the we'll look on the date, both us and the department, so that all our members are able to attend that strategic planning. But in principle, we agree that we must have a strategic planning with a department. We've never had that strategic planning with the department, and also that will inform our legacy report. And issues that must go into strategic planning will then interact with the department once the content advisor has tabled some of the issues that we'll deal with in the next coming weeks meeting. The second one is on the study tour, which we you recall when we're dealing with the amendments from IEC towards the 2021 local government elections. There was this proposed amendment on the electronic voting, and which Parliament could not or advised the committee that IEC may need to pack so that at least we establish modalities on the and lessons from other countries on how this matter has been handled. And I think we did process that matter in terms of research work and interacting with the parliamentary office that deals with this process. And we'll consider that we must then move towards the study tour this year on the areas that Mr. Salmon has raised. And therefore, the administrative details, members will be informed as we move forward. So we're just dealing with the principal proposed decisions that the committee may need to carry. Let me start with the members to comment on the issues, then we stand off the meeting. Honorable Pillay, Honorable Merve, Honorable Rose, Honorable Dito, Honorable Kanyila, if you are back, Honorable Mukhale, Honorable Khwase, if you are back, and Honorable Mudise. In that order, Honorable Pillay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I fully support both of the submissions in respect of the study tour and the strategic planning. I just wanted to make one submission or proposal that the strategic planning session, if at all is possible, to be brought earlier in March. I just think that it's important for us to do it as early as possible. Ideally, it should have been now in February. I understand that we've got the Electoral Amendment Bill to finalize. perhaps if we can look at an earlier date, and you did say you're going to check with department and all role players, I think it'll make sense to do it earlier than later on. Thank you, Chair.
Noted. Thanks, Honorable Play. Co-chair, Fanamarwe.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Now, I'm happy with the proposals that have been made with regards to the study tour and our strategic session. So I don't have any problems or comments in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-chair.
Thank you, Chair. And yes, a big thank you for actually pushing this through. I think it's a really critical study tour, specifically looking at electronic voting, how it assists with fraudulent voting, etc. So I think it's an absolutely critical study tour to go on. It's going to add tremendous value to our law reform efforts. And then also, Chair, yes, agree fully with the planning session that it be on site. I don't have a problem with sort of the second week of March either. So, Chair, fully supportive from my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ross. Honourable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. Like my former colleagues, my previous colleagues were saying, Chair, I also support the study tour and also our strategic planning, where we are going to see what is happening in our departments and everything. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tito. Honourable Kanyile, if you are online again. Okay, Honourable Mokgale. Honourable Lukwase. Honourable Mudise. Mza. Okay, I think it's noted. Agreed in principle on the decision carried, Mr. Salmon. Mr. Matonsi.
Yes, Chair.
We managed to consider to work on the physical meeting. I think administratively we managed to see how we rework that point, given the difficulties of a network and load shedding. Members are unable to contribute or to join the meeting. So I think we may need to look on that possibility. And also stakeholders, there will be stakeholders that will not able to contribute to the meeting given the load shedding. So I think something that administrative we may need to check. Mr. Salmon, I see your hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, just to respond to the request to move the strategic planning forward, an indication that's just really there is that we are dependent on the department and entities making their strategic plans available first. So we were only going to be briefed by the IEC and the DHA and GPW on their strat plans in that week in any case. So we've just tried to coincide our planning with as closely as possible to that, to their planning, which in turn, they can't finish their plans until they finish their budgets. And also in the weeks prior to that last week of March, all the budget debates and the various plenaries will be occurring. So we can't really be away from Parliament itself for too long. So that week is only the only real week we have, unless we make it later. So that's as soon as we can do it realistically. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, it's fine. That, I think, is an administrative matter. We'll check with all members the availability, and then we'll check with the stakeholders first, and then we'll communicate once we find the possible date that accommodates all of us, including stakeholders. Thanks, members. Is there any other matter, Mr. Matonsi?
Yes, Chairperson, just for clarity, Chair, you recall one time when I spoke to you about the physical meeting, you indicated that no, maybe after we have dealt with the bill. So then we started having physical meetings. so that now it's clear that tomorrow, Friday and Monday, it should still be a virtual meeting. Then from there, we'll try to get venues in Parliament.
Yeah, once you're done with the bill, let's look on the possibilities of, like other committees have started fiscal meetings so that we don't disadvantage members to contribute to the discourse of the committee. Is there another matter, Mr. Mertens, announcements?
No, the last one is the message that I sent yesterday for members that have not yet sent me their information. So that I could get letters from Parliament for them to be able to apply for their passport. So if I could get that today, then I'll send it to Parliament to get the letters.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Pillay, I see your hand.
Yes, Chair. I just wanted clarity. I heard Brian Eddie say something about Monday. Just reminding you that Monday there's a physical sitting of the motions of condolence for the former speaker, Finijin Walla.
No, I said no next week, the 7th.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Yeah, which is Tuesday next week.
Sure.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, members, for your time, stakeholders. Ms. Daksha, you wanted to comment on the last item or the state law advisor?
No, Daksha, she has left.
Okay. No. Thank you very much, honorable members and colleagues, for attending the committee. We'll then reconvene tomorrow to continue the reports and deliberations. Thanks very much. Our meeting stand adjourned.